Welcome back to Stone Cold Shots. Oh, you get a nice fizz on those. Hey? You get that? Nice. I should have let that ring out a little bit. This is the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every week, we drink some cold shots. We review and recap a wrestling pay-per-view from any promotion, from any time period. This week, well, before we get to this week, why don't you guys introduce yourselves and tell the people, the Stone Cold Shots universe, your name. And if you were going to weaponize an everyday object with thumbtacks, what would it be?
Ooh.
Oh, my God. You want to take this one first?
No.
I got to think of something.
Oh, God. But it's so cheap of me to say a book, right?
A little mix between Darby Allin and the librarian.
And the librarians.
if Darby Allin joined the librarians.
And then I was like, what else am I into? I'm into embroidery, but that's already needles.
And no, just like every time, what's your name?
No, I know. That wasn't real. Okay, my name is Lauren Maxine. I'm going to go with a book. But I can't think of anything else that would
be a library card.
Oh, okay.
No, that's,
is this a studded library card?
It's flimsy. I guess if you like could affix it to somebody's chest via tack.
Okay.
That would be really extreme. I feel like they'd have to really go in, which is gross.
My name's the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. I guess if I were to do anything, I would weaponize with thumbtacks. I don't know, like a lounge chair or something like that.
Mm.
Make somebody sit down
on it. You would like throw them into the chair.
Yeah, it's more like it's a lounge chair and not just a regular wrestling folding chair.
No, it's got to be a lounge chair, and I got to trick them. It's got to be like the whoopee cushion gag where I trick them into sitting on it, right?
Perfect.
Like you, at the last second, sub in a tacked chair instead of the regular plush chair.
Exactly. Make yourself at home. Got them. Very 24/7 championship.
Yeah. I'm Campbell Falconer, and I would thumbtack weaponize a Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville brand margarita maker.
Oh.
And then I would make a delicious margarita using Stone Cold's recipe from Hot Ones. The man uses agave syrup instead of simple syrup, and that is what's up. That is how you know a true margarita connoisseur.
It's a high class tequila, a little bit of triple sec,
yep.
Agave. Sounds perfect.
Like there's like a Harrison Ford film about like hackers. I can't remember what it's called, but
Air Force
like
One.
No. But one of the main kills in it is like Harrison Ford. It's all like very regular, like gritty, realistic action, and Harrison Ford just clocks somebody with a blender, and they fucking die. I think like they just get hit right in the head because it's solid glass, like a really hard glass, but yeah, sure that's what I picture.
That's a shoot, brother.
Now, the thumbtacks and the blender, like, would they drink thumbtacks? Like,
no, the thumbtacks would be on the outside of the blender, and I would hit them Harrison Ford style.
Oh, okay.
And then plug it in and make a marg.
Gotcha.
Hmm. You don't want to pull a Jimmy Havoc and eat the tacks.
No, definitely do not want to. So if you haven't guessed by now, we're talking about All Out, AEW's big pay-per-view. We wanted to do something. There was so much shit happening this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Like, we had NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff. I still think the NXT UK brand needs to shorten those pape names a little bit. We had New Japan Pro Wrestling Royal Quest. There was like Noah pay-per-view. There was a whole bunch of shit. Did you guys watch anything else, or did we just watch All Out?
I watched a bit of the UK.
Yeah.
UK Cardiff TakeOver, whatever. The main event for that was maybe the best match of the weekend overall.
Oh, wow.
Did we see
the main event?
We did see the main event. Yeah, that was the Volta, as they call
Volta.
It.
Volta!
I would say, if not the best, probably tied with something from All Out. But yeah, it was very good.
I haven't watched
that big,
Royal
boy.
Quest yet. I really, really want to see Suzuki versus Okada, because I feel like that's going to be nuts.
I heard that was a pretty good match.
Yeah, there was so much stuff. But yeah, we're going to be talking about All Out. We're going to kick it off with the buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
We got Golden Boy back on commentary.
Thank fucking
no more
God.
Alex Marvez.
Woo! Man, you know what? Again, nice guy. Seems like a nice guy. He's just better suited for doing the post shows and, you know, backstage segments and just nothing actively commentating yeah. On the action going on.
And Golden Boy is so lovely.
Yeah, he's really great.
He is great on commentary. Yeah. He, like, really, really enjoyed having him back. Like, almost to the point where, like, it's cool that they're getting Tony Schiavone. How do you...
It's Schiavone.
All right. Schiavone. I feel like that E should be silent. It should be Tony Schiavone. Getting him on AEW TV is, like, great, and, like, I'm excited for that, but I am a little heartbroken to see Golden Boy leave us again, because I think he's been really, really solid in both Fighter Fest and All Out. Like, he did a really great job.
I think the announcing job is pretty fluid right now with you know, their plans, because I've heard stuff about Tony Schiavone maybe doing just a part of the TV, and then Golden Boy doing the other.
Okay.
Maybe Golden Boy just doing the papes.
Sure.
You know, so I think they're still trying to figure out how it's going to look, right?
I kind of like the idea of having, like, a different commentary team for your papes than you have for your TV show. Like, again, like, make everything about it kind of special.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we kick things off with the Casino Battle Royale to determine one of the contenders for the AEW Women's Championship. How do you guys feel about this Casino Battle Royale, like, the structure, the stipulation, the, like, you know, the suits and the everybody entering, like...
I think it allows for a better flow than a WWE, like, sort of classic battle. Or is it even a battle royal, or is it the Royal Rumble where someone comes in every, like, fucking 5 minutes?
Yeah, like a Royal Rumble.
It's one extra person, but added in way more frequently, which is distracting and doesn't allow for, like, a huge amount of, like, cool action in the ring. So I think I prefer this a little better. I think they've botched it with the timing on some of them, but...
I think... It would be better if in the group of five, they even had like a 5-second entrance video and a song to introduce it, because it loses the specialness of, you know, some of the surprises, like Tenille Dashwood coming out and all that stuff. I think it would be cooler with like a little entrance video. They make it like halfway down the ramp, the next person entrance video, maybe something like that. So
maybe
there's like that big pop wow factor, because that's the thing about the Royal Rumble. It's always a surprise, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So even if you still want to do the group of five, I think you could still pace it where everybody gets a little bit.
I felt like every group of five that came out, the first woman to enter was like a big deal. It was someone like a Tenille Dashwood or like an Ali.
Yeah.
And then the last woman to enter was a big deal. It was someone like Awesome Kong or a Jazz.
Yeah.
And the three in the middle was just like, who the fuck are these people? And then they got eliminated before I had any idea of what was going on. And I think the other thing is that it's like, in the Royal Rumble, we'll say, like, you know, it counts down, it goes, and then someone's, like, Titantron comes up and their music hits, and you immediately, there's an immediate cue, like, a visual and audio clue of, like, oh, this is someone that I should be excited for, this is someone that I should do. Whereas this is a thing where it's, like, the card flips around, and it has a suit on it, and the suit doesn't mean anything, because I don't know who has drawn what suit. It's and like there were, especially for the first one, the suit came up, and the suit on this, I don't know if anyone noticed this, the suit on the screen was clubs, and the announcer was like, and the diamonds are coming out. So it's like they didn't even fucking sync that up properly, which really showcased exactly how meaningless it was. Like, it didn't matter that they got that wrong.
Yeah,
right.
So like, it, to me, it's a thing where it's like, I like the idea of it, and I do like that it speeds up the battle royale, or like the Royal Rumble-iness of it. But I think it's a little overbooked right now, and they need to figure out a way of, like, even if it's a little video package beforehand where they show some of the women drawing a card and being like, I got this, so you know.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe two of the women in each group, and then the other three are randoms.
Yeah.
Like, right. Is kind of a thing that I think maybe they could do.
Just something, right? Just so, because I feel like the specialness, again, is kind of lost on the crowd, because it's like, oh shit, it's ODB, oh shit, it's, you know, and they're trying to identify everybody there, and then also the camera work in this match was so bad. I was actively like not interested in what was going on, because they would focus on, you know, the new people coming in, and then they cut to somebody being eliminated, but they wouldn't stay on that person long enough for me to realize who it was, and then they'd cut to somebody resting in the ring, and then they cut back to a melee going on outside. They didn't let any stories kind of unfold, and I don't know if that's the booking of the match, or just a very feisty camera work, you know?
I think both, yeah. There were a lot of eliminations that happened off camera, but I don't know. I still don't think it was that bad. Like, I thought it was a really engaging battle royal, and it showcased a lot of people really well. And I loved Mercedes Martinez as the Joker.
That was so good.
Yeah. I think it was more from the production side of things that you had like a lot of the camera missing big spots. I think making the choice to have brawls on the outside a thing happen was kind of a misstep. Like, it felt like they were going for more of like an Aztec Warfare Lucha Underground style battle royale, as opposed to a Royal Rumble where it's all very contained inside of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, if you didn't have, you know, Britt Baker running out to fight Bea Priestley on the ramp, which was like a cool spot and did further their story really well. But like, if you didn't have them fighting on the outside, then I think it would have, there would have been less missed timings and less missed camera spots and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think overall the match was really good. Like, I thought everybody in the match worked really hard. I thought there's some cool spots. There's some cool surprises. You know, I don't want to take away from the actual match at all. It's just like those were like the glaring things for me in the match that I was watching, and I was like, I can't.
This was not definitely a absolute production nightmare. Yeah. Where like there was a countdown that ended, and then they had to wait for like almost a minute for Penelope Ford to get eliminated by whoever before they actually did the entrance, which is like, if you're going to do a countdown, it has to happen then. Like, that's the stipulation that you've given us, you know, when Mercedes Martinez enters and it's like that big moment, they miss Awesome Kong, Jazz, and Brandi Rhodes getting eliminated while they're filming her entrance. But I do think that from a booking perspective and from a story perspective, like, they did a really, really good job of like the Nyla Rose being in from the very beginning, getting a whole bunch of eliminations going right through to the end. You had Allie continuing her feud with Brandi and Awesome Kong. Brandi and Awesome Kong coming out together, and commentary did a really good job selling that like, you know, Brandy's kind of manipulating things. And then you had the, like, we're skipping over like a lot of stuff here, but like that final four, and especially the final three, where you had Britt Baker and Bea Priestley, who had been like murdering each other all match, realizing that they had to put it aside in order to try and take on Nyla Rose. Like, I think the booking and like the stages that they went in, and you had your spots with like the librarian stepping on the books, and
that was
like,
so good.
It was a Kofi spot. They got a Kofi spot.
I really appreciated that. Those people normally really irritate me, but that was like a good spot.
That was a cute spot.
And then they were gone, and it was fine. Yeah. Like,
and also some like really fun debuts. I really liked seeing Priscilla Kelly in there. Big Swole from, she was in the Mae Young Classic last year.
Big Swole was really impressive.
Yeah, and I thought Sadie Gibbs held it down really well as well. Yeah. She was the other woman in the final four.
I didn't know who she was.
I didn't either, but it was, I felt like this match really separated like the women from the girls.
Sure.
Where there were some people who clearly could not handle how loosey-goosey it was, and like really needed kind of more of a structured match format. And there were some women who were like Penelope Ford, who was just like standing watching things happening, waiting for something to happen. And then you had your Sadie Gibbs or your Allies or your Britt Baker
was great in that
who
match.
And or Tennille Dashwood, who were like always doing something.
Yeah, even if their spot in the match was over, they were always trying to tie somebody up or make something
look
happen,
like
right?
They were doing something.
So
really good showing for the division as a whole, I thought.
A really exciting part that happened and like made me excited for the future was Nyla Rose squaring up with Awesome Kong, and then like a whole bunch of people like interrupt, and you don't actually
see
that moment. Like you don't see them square up and have like a straight up match, but it's like a nice tease. And now I'm like really excited for it.
I think they're doing a good job with like their booking of Awesome Kong has been really good, because I think she, in a lot of the spots that she's doing, looks a little rusty.
She looks rusty, but they're making her seem strong and dominant.
They're making her seem like
she's
a big deal,
making her do too much.
They're teasing all of these things that they can wait to, they can wait to pull the trigger on Aja Kong versus Awesome Kong. They can wait to pull the trigger on Nyla Rose versus Awesome Kong until Awesome Kong is like ready to go with them.
Yeah, give her some time.
Again.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Nyla Rose wins off of kind of a like little screwy finish.
So cool. I loved it.
It like didn't make her look weak, but it also didn't make Britt Baker look weak for losing like that.
I thought it was good. I gave it 3.5 bald heads.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know,
That's a good one.
Probably would have gone higher, but the camera and everything just kind of, I don't know, messed it up a little. It made it less enjoyable than it should have been.
I also wanted to, like, highlight their belt, like the women's world championship belt or whatever, best in the
good
world.
Good looking belt.
It really evokes an engagement ring to me.
Okay.
I thought it, like, was a really nice way of making it an extremely feminine looking belt without having a pink butterfly on it. But it looks like a princess ring with like a big oval in the center, like a big diamond and then two little diamonds on either side.
Yeah, it's a really nice nice belt.
I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that's what I got from it.
No. Riho's going to look great holding that.
You don't think they're going to give it to Nyla Rose right off the bat?
I think they're definitely going to give it to Nyla Rose.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. Yeah. Moving on the buy-in, we have Private Party versus Angelico and Jack Evans.
Yeah, this was a Jack Evans showcase if I've ever seen one.
Oh, doggy.
I love Jack Evans and Angelico.
This was, especially for Jack Evans in this match, this is a real, for me, a coming out party for him. Mm-hmm. He made Private Party look so good this match.
Yeah.
He worked so hard to put those guys over. And mm-hmm. Private Party, you can tell they're going to be great in a few years.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of the right pieces.
Yeah.
I think it's just maybe a little bit of an experience, but they've got good charisma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their moveset is kind of there, and, like, they've got some great tag team moves.
Yeah, they have great tag team moves.
Yeah. When it was, like, Evans and Quinn in the ring together doing so many flips.
So many flips.
That was nuts. And I think it's kind of the thing where it's, like, those two guys are sort of the standouts of their respective teams.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. That, like, Jack Evans I could see as a singles guy, and Angelico not so much. And what's the guy's first name? Mark Quinn? Mike Quinn?
Something like that.
I can see him kind of going on his own just from his moveset, whereas the Isaiah Cassidy seems like a little bit more of the mouthpiece, like a little bit more of the Montez Ford. Mm-hmm. If we're going to draw that
the
comparison.
The most obvious comparison.
I don't know how your brains went there, because I didn't see the...
the one thing that I thought was really funny about Private Party is that, like, their theme song and all of their moves are just, like, straight up Lil Jon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, their theme song so is.
Yeah, but, like, their moves, I don't know if you heard the commentary calling it out. It's like, oh, from the windows just to the walls is, like, a name of one of their moves.
No,
like,
I didn't hear that.
Shots, 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 shots is, like, one of their things that
they
do.
No way!
Yeah.
How did I miss this? They're
just Lil Jon the wrestlers, except Mark Quinn dresses like Ruby Rod from Fifth Element.
I just thought it was amazing, and they all, like, Jack Evans and Angelico are, like, so smooth and so amazing together, as always. And this was, like, my first experience of Private Party, so I was really into them.
Did you like the heel turn?
I've always thought of them as heels. Like, that's never been a thing. Like, that's why I was so shocked when Jack Evans and Angelico were like, these are our friends and they did a good job at the end.
It's like, oh, they're turning face?
Yeah, I was like, whoa, they're being so nice. And then they turned heel and I was like, okay, there's my guys. Yeah, but yeah.
I thought they were totally working face at Fight for the Fallen. And then it was nice to see in this match that they started out being very technical, kind of like doing a normal match, like dancing, doing their thing.
Doing the fucking alien the noodle weird alien backwards. Yeah. I love that shit.
Like, because at the start of the match, I was like, these are both face teams who just like dancing to shitty, like, 2012 house music.
Yeah.
Why are they fighting? They should be hanging out together. And, like, over the course of the match, like, Angelico started to work a little bit more heel. And the turn at the end, I thought, was perfect. And that was, like, to me, that was the thing that justified this match being on the card, was, like, deepening the field of their tag division and, like, being like, okay, we have another heel tag team. Because I think, like, one of the things that we've kind of talked about in our other AEW episodes is that they don't really have a very strong, like, heel-face dynamic in a lot of these matches.
I agree. I can actually see them being a trio as well, like, maybe fitting into the trios, because it looks just by the pace of this pay-per-view and, you know, with the best friends, we'll get into that later.
Yeah,
but they're trying to build up a trios division,
totally,
which I'm really stoked on. So I think one more person in that group to make the dynamic.
Fucking Ivelisse.
Ivelisse?
No. No.
Why?
Because no.
Give me that Lucha Underground callback.
That's the only thing they have in common.
Yeah, it'd be great.
No.
But the finish of this match, though.
Private Party's finisher is one of the best tag team finishing moves.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Private Party take it. They win. They raise Angelico and Jack Evans' hands. And then Angelico and Jack Evans turn on them, beat them down. And it's like, it's perfect for them to be heels because, like, Jack Evans has such a fucking mouth on him.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, a Kevin Owens level, like, you know, shit talker.
Yeah.
And Helico is just so naturally dislikable.
Just naturally. It's like that shit heel, like, Alex Wright kind of thing. He has that.
He's got Jimmy Havoc's haircut. Him. Did you notice that?
And he's got Jimmy Havoc's haircut.
Josh, would you rate it?
I gave it 3.5 bald heads.
So. Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Don't have a whole lot left in the buy-in, but I want to shout out this Wardlow package.
Good.
Was
can I just paint
sick.
You a picture of what happens
paint
in this?
Paint me a
this?
Picture. Paint Please. Me a word picture.
Please. So Wardlow has...
Is that his name? Why are you laughing?
It's so stupid.
I thought I was getting it wrong.
Yeah, because they never say it, and it just looks so weird.
Wardlow.
Yeah, it's not Wardlaw. So Wardlow is walking in a parking garage with a beautiful hot woman, and they're like just like walking around, just being like, yeah. And then these like skeevy hooligans, like a pack of hooligans, see them and set upon them to like mug them or something.
Set upon them.
Yeah. and then this hot couple just like turns around. They're just like, what the fuck? And she unbuttons his shirt for him in a really slow-mo sensual way, and at this point the hooligans are like, excuse me, what the fuck is happening?
Oh shit, it's,
and it's
amazing.
It's Wardlow. Oh,
it's
Wardlow.
Oh shit.
And then he and then he attacks
the
them all
of Wardlow.
Then he attacks them all and like just beats all of them up, but he has like a scratch on his back.
He's got kind of a Brian Cage vibe.
I actually thought
bit.
It was Brian Cage.
Same.
At first.
Yeah.
Guys, he doesn't look fucking anything like Brian Cage. You guys have to
like
get
Brian
your shit
Cage.
Together. No, he looks like Tony Nese, if anything. But he has this like scratch on his back. So I'm wondering if they're doing like a supernatural, like almost Spider-Man-esque, like he's got powers thing because he's got a radioactive scratch on his back. He's like infected.
It could also just be a terrible
awesome.
Tattoo.
I hope not, because it looks really not, and it would be really cool if they got some like spooky lucha vibes up in that. This whole promo pack was so lucha.
This is like exactly the kind of shit that I was talking about that I wanted for like so much of the last two pay-per-views.
Sure.
Of like, give me like a Wardlow style package for Darby Allin. Give me a Wardlow style package for SCU. Give me a Wardlow style package for everybody.
Stop trying to normalize the name Wardlow.
Wardlow.
It's a weird name. Anyway, so I thought the package was great.
Yeah.
I think Warren did a very good job describing exactly what happened in the package.
I think Thank the packages you. On the whole, I think the thing is that they finally have between like all of the Road 2 stuff that they've been doing on YouTube and the past few pay-per-views, they finally have like a big enough bank of video footage that they can make good video packages now.
Yeah.
So that like I actually thought that like going forward for the pay-per-view as a whole, all of these video packages I thought were really, really good.
And I have to keep reminding myself that I have to give them time and not be super, super critical when I watch stuff, because you know, everybody's so spoiled by WWE-level stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something new, right? They're doing something new. There's some mistakes that I still think are inexcusable, but, you know, they're growing and they're getting there, right? So I think this package is a great example of the evolution.
Yep.
And they're making somebody new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard the name
Wardlow
before.
We get a little MJF promo here.
It's awful.
Yeah, you don't like it? Because he's staring at that woman's chest a lot?
Yeah, he's just, like, sexually harassing this woman, this interviewer, and, like, I don't know. I understand that it's really cheap heat, but it was just, like... Ugh,
I didn't like that he only brought one shirt to the arena, and it was his Star Trek costume. Like, that really kind of fucking, like, blew the load of Cody's entrance.
It super did.
Really early. Like, he couldn't have just been there. Like, even just have him
shirtless.
He's a wrestler. It's fine.
Yeah, just have him in his Burberry scarf, which clashes super hard with that shirt anyway.
Yeah. I kind of loved how much it clashed. So before we, like, get to the main card, I just want to, like, what do you guys think of the way that they've been doing, like, the buy-ins versus, like, a WWE pre-show?
I think it's way better paced than a pre-show with WWE.
It felt like a show. Like, it felt like the main event. Like, all of the shit felt main event. Well, not main event, sorry, but main card quality
stuff. It's can't-miss TV, and if I don't have a plan to already buy the pay-per-view and I'm watching that,
mm-hmm.
that should be the place where you sell me on buying this pay-per-view. And I think in that case, I, you know, may have been convinced to purchase it, right?
Totally.
I thought it was a really good buy-in.
And like, yeah. I think it's a thing where it's like, it's so well thought out. Like, they're not having title defenses on
yeah.
the pre-show or the buy-in, you know, like Finn Balor's not losing the Intercontinental title on an AEW buy-in. He's exactly. losing it on the main card.
Yeah.
And it's not just like filler matches with like 45 minutes of panel discussion. It's like every single segment is so well thought out and so well like executed that it is it like must watch is exactly the term that I had in mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, we get to the All Out main card. We're back with this fucking anthem shit again.
I don't know.
It was so funny.
It just like reeks of McMahon.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially the like cool fireworks and yeah. pyro that happened for the anthem.
It's so like it's just like for a company that is so otherwise progressive, it feels so jingoistic and like regressive.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of tradition and stuff that they want to kind of keep in the wrestling. I don't know.
It makes sense. Cody's all about fucking pageantry and yeah. like tradition and you know
Star Trek Voyager. We kick off with SoCal Uncensored versus the newly named tag team or trios team of the Jurassic Express, aka a boy and their dinosaur, aka Jungle Boy, Marco Stunt, and Luchasaurus.
They love them.
Yeah, they're very good. I think a lot of those guys, maybe not Marco Stunt, but we'll see. But I think Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus for sure have a ton of upside. Those
yeah.
guys are amazing.
I love their entrance where like Jungle Boy is on Luchasaurus's shoulders and he like hoofs up into a full like sitting on his shoulders position. Like mm-hmm. he's like sort of leaning back and then
yeah,
he
yeah,
uses
like a
all
sit up.
His core strength to sit
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Well, I really like their entrance that like SCU's cutting their promo and they do their like, you know, if you could say it with me, it would make my day or whatever. And this is the worst city I've place ever been. And
can,
like,
can I just say something really quick about
yeah.
that? I don't like that at all. I don't like SCU's kind of like opening DX thing that they do.
It's very New Age okay. Outlaws. It's very Enzo and Cass. I think for now I like it. I want to see them develop a little bit more as like a unit
yeah.
or like as a force within AEW, but I think for the moment, like, they're using them really well. Lauren, you were saying when we were watching it that they're, like, the perfect show openers, because they just, like, come out, and they have their thing that everybody in the crowd gets to say with them,
yeah,
and they pop the crowd, and then they're doing their promo, and then the camera starts to shake, and it's, like, the fucking water from Jurassic Park.
That was really cool.
It was so sick!
For the first camera shake, I was like, what is happening? And then for the second one, I was like, oh, they're doing a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but SCU, like, I don't know. I guess for me, like, less is more with them. But they're a great, mm-hmm. they're a great trio.
Yeah.
And I really like them personality-wise, and mm-hmm. I like them as a team, and I like all that. I don't know, just some of it's a little foresticky, like,
yeah.
you know, like the sing-along stuff that they do at the beginning of a match. I don't know, maybe it's just me, whatever, you know?
It's, like, it's corny, but I feel like that's kind of, like, their shtick is that they're corny.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that kind of bleeds into the match a little bit, where, like, this match was, like, such a perfect first match on the card, because I felt like it showcased exactly the style of wrestling that AEW wants to be showcasing.
Yeah.
Of, like, lots of, like, flippy lucha indie style stuff, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of serious. There's, like, I felt like the stakes were really good because SCU has been kind of, like, the chumps of AEW so far. Like, they haven't really won anything. And, like, so having them in there against this, like, brand new team, it was, like, get a good showing for this new trio, but let these established guys take the win. Everything about this worked for me.
Yeah, I know, and I loved, there was, like, a couple of really great moments, like, really funny moments where, like, I think Christopher Daniels gets one over on the Jurassic Express or whatever, and he does, like, a really slow exaggerated floss.
Yeah, right. Because Marco Stunt was Marco doing the Stunt. Floss earlier.
Yeah, that was really funny.
That was the thing about Marco Stunt that I wasn't totally sold on, was him doing the floss was kind of weird.
Yeah,
but this match I kind of liked him. Like I haven't been totally sold on him yet, but I was like, okay, I get it. He's kind of like the Spike Dudley of Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus.
Exactly.
So one thing about that, I really like them as a trio, and I think that AEW focusing on the trios is, I think, a really smart move, because I'm really interested in a lot of the trios, and it doesn't seem like a thrown together tag team with like one more person. They mm-hmm. seem, they all seem like units,
yeah,
right, which I'm really big on.
And that's,
and I was gonna say, like, I worry about Jungle Boy with Marco Stunt and the big guy. Like, I like that dynamic of the two smaller guys and the big guy, but Jungle Boy's already like, that's his shtick a little bit, and Marco Stunt's even smaller than him,
right?
So I like. Yeah, it worked really well in this match. I'm like, just worried about Jungle Boy and like the kind of,
if Marco Stunt was in like a trio with two other big guys, exactly, you would like it more. Okay, I see that. Yeah,
you know, but this works.
Marco Stunt like turns heel on the Jungle Express.
He joins Jack Evans and.
I think that they should do trios belts, and I think that they should treat the trios belts the way, like, model it after the trios belts in New Japan, where it's like an open weight class, except make the AEW trios belts open to intergender trios. So like I said, like have Eva Lys join Angelico and Jack Evans, or have like an all Joshi women's trio.
Yeah, because like if you bring like a Tessa Blanchard in or something, for example, she would be perfect for that title.
Yeah.
Luchasaurus in this match was fucking unreal.
Unreal. He was so insane.
He was so insane, and he was hitting these like high spot, backflip.
Yeah. Like moonsaults.
Shooting star press. Dude did a standing shooting star press.
He's like 8 feet tall. You can't do that.
You got to put the strap on this guy.
He's going to take down Jericho.
I would love to see it.
He's so cool. And I love it when he screams. Like, he has such a deep, loud voice, because his vocal cords are as long as my whole arm.
Yeah.
And there was a really gnarly bit that happened.
This took 5 stars off of this match for me, if it's what I think you're talking about.
It is. There's a part where we learn why wrestlers oil their hair. Because Jungle Boy, with his beautiful curly locks, falls out of the ring and kind of smacks his head, and his hair, like, as he's falling, the momentum of him falling out, he smacks his head off the ring ropes, and his hair wraps around the ropes. He falls out, and a huge tuft of hair is left on the ring ropes for a couple seconds.
There's like
it is nasty.
A slow mo replay of like Christopher Daniels doing like a jump over the rope, and it's just there swinging like a fucking ribbon in the it's disgusting.
It must have really, really hurt. Matt.
Josh, what did you give your bald headed brethren?
3 3/4.
Nice.
This is a fun match. I really liked it.
It was great. Really, really good start to the pape, like a lot of momentum, and they keep that fucking momentum going.
I didn't expect the next match coming up so soon.
Oh my god. We got Kenny Omega versus the bastard Pac.
How fucking good is Pac?
So good.
So good.
He looks so gross. I love him.
He's such a fucking gnarly looking elf. You know,
goblin.
Goblin man.
He has the fucking most disgusting haircut in the entirety of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Jimmy Havoc included, because he has that like really, really long greasy hair, but it's cut in a perfect rectangle on the like his the back of his head has fucking corners shaved in, and it's just so lank and disgusting, and he's like the perfect mix between like a hobbit and an Uruk-hai. Like,
he's a goblin.
Yeah.
And he's a pure Lord of the Rings goblin. But yeah, he also like purposefully, like, his hair is wet, and he'll pull it up in front of his face so that it's going over his face and obscuring it. I think he loves that, like, really
like
gross,
gnarled look.
Yeah.
Because you can tell he forces it, just like a lot of his promo shots and everything on the Titantron.
Yeah.
He looks so fucking gnarled, and it's like, what an asshole this guy is.
What a bastard.
What a bastard.
The other thing that I noticed about these entrances that I really liked is they got the win-loss record going next to their title cards, which was cool. And I liked that they had, like, singles record and total record.
Yeah.
Was really nice. Like, a very nice touch. They're really starting to, like, develop all of these things that they've been talking about for a year that we haven't seen in the papes so far.
And it makes me interested in when TV starts and it's a weekly thing, how they're going to present that. And it's a good that we get, you know, like, what's your record like in singles matches, tag matches, trios matches,
yeah,
and then like an overall record, and then this type of match record. I like that.
Do you think they'll do like a championship counter? Because I feel like
they must.
That's right? Got to mean more than just a regular singles match, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Tony Khan's such a nerd with statistics and stuff like that. He's for sure going to have something included in there for every stat you can ever imagine.
Speaking of nerds, Kenny comes in, his entrance is super nerdy, but I actually really liked his entrance gear.
His gear is great.
Yeah, his
gear. Entrance video sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's just walking around Shinjuku Crossing.
Yeah, that was really weird. And his horrible song, yeah, that is not as good as his old song as we've previously discussed.
His new song, it reminded me so much of TJP's theme from WWE, where it's just like, he likes 8-bit shit.
You're right.
Let's get Animanaguchi up in this bitch. They're not doing anything.
Yeah, you're right. But I really like his entrance gear. It's like very cartoony, almost like samurai, like very Japanese looking.
Yeah, kind of like a Tron vibe to it, with like a little bit of a Pacific Rim vibe to it.
To me, it felt way more like cartoony, traditional Japanese than like some weird sci-fi stuff.
Like a Ghost in the Shell or a Cowboy Bebop?
Maybe more Cowboy Bebop. But yeah.
You're all the worst.
And then I like Bebop. I like how it starts with like Kenny is going full showboaty heel asshole.
Yeah.
Like that's how the whole vibe is.
Mm-hmm. Which was crazy, right? Because he came in, and even his Moxley promo that he cut on being the Elite before was
like, "What happened, bro?
Yeah. Oh, hey, you got a little injury? Try to be like me, hey, buddy.
Yeah.
You know. So it was weird seeing him do this whole asshole shtick.
Mm-hmm. He does it very well. He can do anything he wants.
Yeah.
Like I love him.
Did they move the barricades closer to the ring?
They sure did.
Okay. Yeah. They, like, last time when they did All Out, they were like, all right, we sold out. We can squeeze an extra row of chairs in here.
And seven more people.
Hopefully Neville won't shatter both of his shins again.
And there's a table spot later in the card that, you know, they couldn't even unfold the table properly. I think Joey Janela, not to get too far ahead.
Yeah.
But he couldn't get the table out right.
No.
You know, so, you know, for doing dives and everything like that, they should have for sure did that by the ramp.
Yeah.
Because that looked so dangerous.
Well, they like, Omega and Pac each had one where they went over and, like, cracked their feet or shins off of the barricade. And, like, I know you've seen that Ring of Honor clip, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That's no bueno. You don't want to be fucking around with that shit.
No, it's...
Like,
steel.
Yeah.
It's that's steel.
Like,
steel barricade. Yeah,
that's the hardest part of the barricade.
I thought this match was great, though. Like, really, really good, strong showing for Pac debuting.
Mm-hmm.
You had the written in out for Kenny to lose of, like, well, he prepared for a hardcore match. He didn't prepare for a high-flying match. Like,
still got Moxley in his head.
And he went in with overconfidence. Like, he was like...
Yeah.
He didn't think Pac was anything, so he fucked up.
And Pac was perfect in this match. And I hope Pac is on full-time now with AEW.
It sounds like he is. From commentary, it sounds like he's there. And I do not think that they would put him over Omega if he wasn't.
For sure.
Yeah, we were definitely thinking, like, I don't know. Like, do you think maybe this is just a one-off just to make up for Moxley being gone? But then, yeah.
But he adds so much as far as depth. You know, obviously wrestling ability, the match that he puts on, and I like that he's toned down his style a lot too, where, you know, he was so fast and, you know, so aerodynamic in WWE, but now his style is a lot more slow and methodical. And
but he's still able to bust out those high-flying moves,
exactly.
And then it's even more shocking when he does, because most of it, he's so hulking now, too, like, he's got those big shoulders.
It's believable, like, when he's putting a beating on somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And he's, that submission,
that,
so he finishes a match by passing, like, having Kenny pass out in, what do they call it, the Brutalizer?
Brutalizer.
Yeah.
It do look brutal.
Great finish.
He also had a really great cutter that I just want to shout out because JR says, huh, a proverbial out of nowhere cutter.
We got the Cracker Barrel Clash.
No, wait.
What?
Josh hasn't given us...
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
4 1/3 bald heads, Campbell.
That's a great rating.
It was a great match.
Yep.
Everything you wanted to see. It was a great back and forth. Big surprise ending with Pac with the Brutalizer, Kenny Omega passing out.
I wasn't sure what to expect from it.
Yeah.
It was sick.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I thought the pacing of the show and putting that on right after that last, you know.
These first three matches out the gate are like
dynamite.
Insane that they put all of them on opening the show.
Yeah.
We move on to the Cracker Barrel Clash. I saw the press release for this and thought it was a joke.
Yeah, you were double and triple checking, sourcing everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is our hardcore triple threat between Darby Allin, Jimmy Havoc, and Joseph Janela.
I would have done something with Darby Allin's name, like All In.
You know? Darby All In?
Yeah, and then like, you know,
All In. Cross it. Darby All Out.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I'm not working. Whatever.
This is the match that I was most excited for.
It did not disappoint.
And it did not disappoint at all.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I barely took any notes of this one because it was just so amazing. But
that was actually a lot of this show. I the match would finish and I would look and be like, what did I write down for that? Oh, nothing. I didn't write anything down because it was such a good match. Yeah.
I just wrote down, you know, thumbtack, mouth, paper cut,
chair flip, just naming
fucked up spots. Yeah. God.
So much was going on in this match, and so much of it looked so crazy. Darby Allin's a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. He's so hot. I just can't
wait to see him on TV because I feel like his booking has been so interesting so far where he hasn't won a match yet, but he has been like the guy that I've been most impressed with in every match that he's done.
And even at the end of the match, when they're kind of wrapping up, they did the focus on Darby Allin.
On Darby Allin.
Up the ramp.
That was so, like, such a, like, affected fall, but it works really well for him.
It was great. He looked like he had just eaten 100 hard-boiled eggs.
Darby in this match pulls out a skateboard with thumbtacks on the bottom, and it was tough to tell what it was at first.
Oh my god, I was ready for it. I was immediately like, he's gonna do, what's it called, like a grind on somebody's body.
So that's the thing. This is one of the few things that I got spoiled on, because I wasn't able to watch this live, and Darby posted a picture of the skateboard, and he said, can't believe I got this through airport security, or something like that. But I thought he was just gonna like when Havoc goes for the forearm and he like hits his arm with the board, I thought that was the spot. When he got up there and fucking like jumped on it and landed on Janela's back and like literally learned like grinded across his back.
And the thumbtacks were in
there. Yeah. When he initially did it, I was thinking maybe, because the first camera shot that they do of it, I thought maybe he just did like a clean jump onto land and jump off. And because the thumbtacks just went right in that first shot, I was like, oh, he was really nice about it. He just did a down and up. No. And then they have another shot later and there was like all huge gouges in his back. And they have different angles of him just like douching down. Like it's nothing gentle about it.
No. And then obviously the other big spot in this match was the coffin drop with the Cracker Barrel onto
steel steps
with nobody there. Darby Allin's a fucking maniac, and doing that blind with all those,
this match kind of made Jimmy Havoc seem cooler to me, even though he looks awful.
Yeah,
looks like a piece of shit, but he had really cool spots, and I was so sold on him being an shitty, no good asshole that at the beginning when he first gets the staple gun out and he staple guns his titty and his arm, I was like, that ain't real, that's like a worked staple gun.
Oh my god.
And then later they show like how bloody he is and I was just like, oh,
it's not okay. A working staple gun, that's no, a working that's, staple
that's
gun
that's cool. Yeah.
Jimmy Havoc
and then like
stapling himself in the arm was like the coolest thing that he had done so far. Yeah. And I think this is the thing where it was like, we've seen Darby Allin and been impressed by Darby Allin. We had like the Joey Janela, the previous Cracker Barrel match against Adam Page.
With the Donkey Kong.
And like, we know what Joey Janela can do. And like, this was the match where I was like, oh, I understand what people see in Jimmy Havoc. Like, I get this now.
Yeah, he's not super talented. He's just super like hardcore.
I'm still not like,
is that really rude?
Crazy about him, but like, The thumbtacks in the mouth and getting his mouth taped shut spot. Yeah, his and even like the acid rainmaker onto the Cracker Barrel was like pretty cool. Like that was a good cool. finish.
It feels like it was a little improvised too.
Because he
fucked up.
Yeah.
It was like, cool. That actually made me, because it was improvised, I was like, all right, Jimmy.
Okay, you can go. Yeah. You can go.
The two other things that I really liked in this was, one, the Cornette spot where Janella and his like ongoing war against Jim Cornette.
Every pay-per-view.
He pulls out the tennis racket and he goes, who the fuck would use this? And just throws it away.
It's so funny.
And I wanted to shout out when Jimmy Havoc hits Darby Allin with the tray.
Of biscuits.
The commentary specifically shouts out that they are fluffy biscuits.
JR says the best damn biscuits I've ever had.
They do so much fucking shilling for Cracker Barrel in this match.
I'm okay with like shameless plugs like this if it's in this context.
Of like the literal match is named after them. Yeah. I was like, how do you think like this was a happy coincidence, or do you think that they specifically sought out sponsors who had props in their name, like props as part of their gimmick, because it works out so well.
And you know they have a good sense of humor about it, because last year at All In, they had the Cracker Barrel spot where he like rolled like Donkey Kong spot.
So
it's, they've got to know, like they've got to be in on the joke. So
would you give it?
I gave it 4 bald heads.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot of fun. And as far as a hardcore match goes, this is everything you can want out of one. It was like, and it was light enough that, you know, it wasn't super dark, super.
It wasn't like, and it's, I think they've been building their hardcore division really well. If we'll call it like a hardcore division.
Sure, yeah.
But like that, this wasn't as like sadistic and fucked up as like the Moxley kind of stuff was. So it's like you still have all of these guys being sort of like on par with each other, and then you have Moxley as kind of like a final boss, like a level above that.
This reminded me a lot of like a WWE Attitude Era hardcore match, but with a lot of like really innovative fun spots, and like the athletes in it were amazing, right?
Innovative is a really great way to describe it. Like they were taking hardcore, like just doing whatever new stuff they could with an old premise, which is cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't a huge fan of the paper cut stuff, but
I thought it looked kind of corny. Like it didn't really kind of do it. Like when he pulled out the paper, I thought it was like, oh, he's going to staple gun.
That's what I thought.
The AEW logo to somebody's face.
Yeah.
Can't win them all.
We were just talking to somebody who said it was very like upsetting to them. So I guess you have to be a certain type of person.
It worked for some people.
Yeah.
All right, we got the Dark Order versus the Best Friends in a, you know what? Fuck this. The first round of the AEW Tag Team Tournament.
The Spooky Perverts.
I'm amazed that we didn't get a Spooky Perverts chant.
There was.
Oh, I didn't hear it. I missed that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Right on. Dark Order got their entrance gear figured out. Stu Grayson, he worked on his like crafting skills and
used some garbage bags.
He got it up to 99. He built some better leg armor. I like Evil Uno's, like he's got kind of like a better looking mask now, and he's painting his face under the mask, like taking a little cue from Pentagon there.
Yeah,
we've spoken at length about how much this first round by doesn't really make sense. You can listen to our previous episode for that. I think maybe the thing that they're going for is like the only way that this makes sense for this to be a first round bye is if, so Dark Order wins, they get the first round bye. I felt like that was a little telegraphed. If Best Friends enter in the first round and they end up knocking out the Dark Order in like the quarterfinals or something,
that would be great.
Then all of this bullshit will have been worth it.
Yeah, because right now as it stands, you know, who knows if the Best Friends are even in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I for all I can tell, this was a first round match.
Yeah,
you know,
more or less.
Yeah, good call.
So personally, I feel like there's not like a whole lot to say about this match in comparison to like the previous three. This was great. It was perfectly serviceable. I think Dark Order's like tag moves are really good. Like everything that they do in tandem with each other works really well.
Yeah, and like they're all good wrestlers. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's some good spots with Chucky T and Trent. And I love everything that it does, like best friend spots, you know, and, you know, Chuck did this like chest slapping spot after he like did a tope suicida. And then he like slapped his chest and he's like, ow. He grabbed his chest after. I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah. Lauren, how do you feel about the best friends?
Okay, the thing that gets me with them is that, like, their gimmick is that they're really good friends and thus they should be very good tag team partners because they are best friends. But it's like, that is what all tag teams are. They are two dudes who are extremely in sync and know, like, are really good friends and know how to wrestle really well and, like, know each other's thoughts, and thus they are so in sync and so good at wrestling. And it's
if they're such best friends, those other tag teams, they wouldn't have a Rainmaker camera zoom out every time they hugged. Nah,
I really like that, actually. Yeah. That's one of the only things that they do that I really like. But yeah, I feel like their fighting style doesn't evoke their hardcore best friendness. Like, they should be, like, their entire wrestling gimmick and all of their moves should be about how they're best friends, and all of their moves should include each other. If that's going to be their shtick, they need to have, like,
more double team moves.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, almost like Enzo and Cass, where one's throwing the other at each other. Or, like, yeah. Even Private Party did way more moves where they were using each other.
Or, like, in this match, like, the Dark Order did more tandem, like, together tag team moves than the best friends did. And so it's like, at this point, for me, I'm like, what's the difference between the best friends and Angelico and Jack Evans?
Yeah.
Why are Angelico and Jack Evans not best friends, but, like, the best friends are best friends?
There's kind of a thing. There's, like, an old tag team mentality. Like, it was like the Heavenly Bodies used to do stuff like this, where one tag team partner would be in the ring and get, like, punched in the face, and he'd go down, and then he'd run over on his knees to his corner and, like, hug his partner's waist. I'd love, like, more spots like that.
There was, like, a really good spot where I think, like, Trent was in the ring, and both the Dark Order were trying to, like, stop him from making the tag.
And they
both do a dive, and he dives, like, just further and tags in Chuck Taylor, and, like, that was really good. And, like, that's the thing, is, like, there was fun stuff in this match. Yeah. Like, they did a good job.
You know what I didn't like about the little minions, what were they called?
The creepers.
The creepers. They all look like fans.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they did. Like,
only one of them is out of shape. The rest of them are in shape.
I saw like four of them that were out of shape.
I love the creepers.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult the creepers.
I guess they could all be more fit, but like...
No, but they were just like...
They just didn't do anything. They just, like, kind of hung out in the corner. And then, there were, like, two spots where they were beating down. I wanted them to be, like, surrounding the match. Like, make every Dark Order match, like, a lumberjack match where, like, the creepers should just be all around the ring all the time.
Sure. To me, they're so evocative of the Lucha Underground...
Disciples of Death.
That they automatically work, and I think it's not fair because I put on a lot of the, like, storytelling and, like... the character work and, like, just the concept of the Disciples of Death onto the creepers, which I shouldn't be doing, but to me I'm like, the Disciples of Death are so cool and, like, really effective and really scary, and they look exactly the same.
Because I don't think the creepers have got there yet.
Yeah, that's fair. The only cool fucking thing that they do is they make a chair.
Yeah, that's pretty much
for Evil Uno, which is super, super cool.
But. My thing is that, like, I forgot that there were moments where I, like, thought that the creepers had gone back to the backstage.
Yeah.
And that, like, I think it's a thing where it's like, if you're going to have seven dudes in weird masks as your entourage, there should never be a point in the match where I forget that they're there. They should be a constant presence.
Like you said, they should be around the match like a lumberjack. And I think every time one of the other guys go out, like, all the creepers should be rushing.
Yeah.
You know, like, they should be more, like, heely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the Dark Order should be using the creepers as, like, a method of cheating, basically. Exactly.
So Dark Order wins with their fucking dope-ass finisher.
Yeah.
And then they try and kidnap Trent, just like I fucking called. Except I liked my version better.
Of course.
Your version was very good.
and then Orange Cassidy comes in and makes a save, hands in pockets.
It was awesome. Like, the lights go out, so you think, oh, what is this, like another creeper or something
like that? Yeah, as like something dark is happening.
And ordery. And the lights go back on, and it's Orange Cassidy in the ring, and he's doing his shtick.
It's so good.
And he does this tope with his hands in his pockets.
Yeah.
onto all of the Dark Order, yeah. And it was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So cool. And then the best friends give him a hug while he still has his hands in his pockets.
Yeah.
And then he pulls his hands out of his pockets to do the smallest thumbs up ever.
The laziest thumbs up.
The Don Cherry.
Would you give it?
3.5.
Yeah.
I'm just excited for things to come. Like, after that match, I was, like, really excited to see what they're going to do with Orange Cassidy. You know, Dark Order, they're doing their thing. I think mm-hmm. I think it's looking pretty good, at least for the tag team division.
Yeah.
And the trios.
Yeah.
We got a video of a shiny mirrored lady.
Mm-hmm. So confusing.
To intro Hikaru Shida versus Riho. This is our Joshi segment, and the winner of this match will face Nyla Rose on the inaugural episode of AEW on TNT for the Women's Championship belt.
And I'm glad it was two match. Joshis that were in there.
Yeah, yeah. You know. Well, and it's cool because, like, so I was like, Hikaru Shida looks familiar. I can't remember if I've seen her before, and I looked her up, and so she was actually on a trios tag match. She was on a trios tag team with Riho against Aja Kong and Emi Sakura, who commentary mentions trained Hikaru Shida at Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
So this is like, they have a little bit of history there. Like, I thought the entrances were great. The two things that I like really pulled out of this was like, they didn't have the win-loss ticker for either of their entrances, which I thought was odd because like... They were in a match. Yeah. Riho has had 3 matches in... Like, she's had a match at every PAPE so far.
Are they not counting women's?
I don't know. It's like, it just seems kind of weird. The other thing is that they... And they had this problem in the Cracker Barrel Clash as well, where they need to fade out the first person's... music.
Yeah, they do a really abrupt before end.
They start the next person's music, because that is very jarring.
Yeah.
It seems like something horrible is happening. Like, whenever the music cuts like that, it seems like the fiend is going to come out or something. Like,
sure. Yeah. It's like very low rent, right? Like, that's a easy production thing, I'd imagine, to figure out.
It was just a thing where, like, because one, it makes it less like, oh, wait, what's happening? Is something happening? And it also, like, when they fade it out and let it sit for like 10 seconds of silence, it builds anticipation for the next person's entrance and for their music to hit.
Yeah.
So I that's just like a small production thing that I think they could do, like, just like such a minor tweak that would take it up like so much.
Sure.
You know,
this is a professional production you got going on. People are spending hundreds of bucks here, you know? Come on.
Yeah. But this match, holy shit. Like,
yeah, it was great.
Really, really fun match.
Yeah.
Like, it keeps up every match on this card. I don't see you giving anything less than 3 stars for anything on this card.
Nothing
like,
got lower than
sorry, 3 bald heads.
Thank you.
The gold standard of podcast rating systems.
Fuck yourself, Meltzer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was like really smooth. You could really tell that they have history together just based on how smooth they were.
Yeah.
It was nuts that Riho is 95 pounds.
98 pounds.
98 pounds.
Because they mentioned it about 100 times. In the match. They mentioned it more than she actually weighs.
But she's great, right? Like, they set up every match of hers, I think, really well, where it's that thing of like, she's such a like pure technical wrestler. Like, you want to talk about, like, a white meat baby face.
Yeah.
You know? That's Riho, right? Yeah, and, Hikaru, not even necessarily playing, like, a heel, but just playing, like, a larger competitor for Riho to overcome.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
She was really impressive this
match.
She's
so beautiful.
Yeah.
She's so beautiful.
And she seems ginormous, and I would like to see her... Like, I want to know how tall she actually is, because she seems huge and hulking, but it might just be because Riho is
just
so small.
98 pounds. Small. Yeah. Like, yeah, 98 pounds.
She's 98 pounds.
She's probably like 5'2".
Wardlow.
Wardlow's much more than 98 pounds.
Well, so Hikaru has like some really cool intergender matches from, like, I was doing some Googling. She has matches against Omega. She has matches against Mero Fuji. Like, cool. Definitely some stuff that I would not be opposed to checking out in the future.
Yeah, I want to see her movies because apparently she's an actress and a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super into this.
Okay.
A triple threat.
Yeah. You know that classic triple threat of actress, singing, wrestling?
It's a classic. Jericho's that, right?
Yeah. Catcher in Cats. So, it, like, again, this is one of those things where I didn't have a lot to say about it other than that it was, like, fucking great.
Yeah, check it out.
Riho wins the match. And I like this thing that they're doing with Riho where, like, she keeps winning these matches, but she doesn't have a finisher.
Yeah, like, she's, like intricate roll-ups.
And, right? Yeah, really, really intricate roll-ups. And yeah. I liked that she went for the same sort of, like, counter into roll-up that she did on Nyla Rose to win her match at Fyter Fest. Yeah. And Shida had scouted that and, like, countered out of it. And then Riho was like, okay, cool, I'm just going to beat you with a different roll-up.
Like, yeah, it's like she never fully submits or, like, beats her opponents mm-hmm. down until they just can't kick out anymore. Like, Shida was trying to kick out yeah. of that, but she just couldn't quite get out in time.
It's no. great because, like, just, like, by definition, she out-wrestles them.
Yeah.
She just, like, out-maneuvers and outplays them.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a very different style of wrestling than what I feel like we're used to seeing. How many bald heads?
I gave this 3 3/4. Yeah, it was a really good match. Yeah. I mean, with the quality of matches, this entire card being so high, they're all going to be in that ballpark, right?
Yeah.
And I think this was a perfect match to build up, you know, Riho for the challenge going against Nyla Rose. It's like,
and they have Nyla Rose come out,
mm-hmm, and a little stare down,
because like they have the history where like Riho's the only person to pin Nyla Rose so far in AEW.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's that thing where it's like on paper you look at that and like, you know, Riho's only 98 pounds. And
I heard.
You know, to quote JR, you do the math. But like, it's a thing where it's like, legitimately, I wouldn't, like, I feel like they probably want to give Nyla that win back and have so. Her go in as like the dominant, you know.
They're really strapping the rocket to her.
But it's also, like, not to jump too far ahead, but, like, I feel like putting the women's belt on, like, a big monster heel is a little repetitive of what they're kind of doing with the world title.
Yeah.
That, like, maybe that's a little too paint by numbers, and maybe we will get the Riho upset, you know?
Well,
like,
I don't think Nyla is a heel.
She is. No?
I think she's a heel.
I don't think so.
I mean, people love her. I think everyone loves her, but I think that she is, like, a heel. Like, they play her as, like,
her,
a dominant
her match
heel.
At
she's not
Fest,
a shitty
she was
heel.
Definitely playing heel. Well,
I don't want to say, like, she's not, like, a shit scrum heel where she cheats or whatever. Mm. She's a very, like, honorable heel, but I think they play her as a heel.
Because I think she's just playing her size, right? Mm. Like, her size advantage. I
she's
really
very
gotten
jeering, like, yeah. and mocking. Mm.
Like, she did, especially at, like, the Fyter Fest match, like, she sucker punches Yuka Sakazaki during the handshake. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you know, so. Like, again, like, I don't think she's, like,
I think she walks the line, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway. I will say that AEW is not falling into the trap of making heels be really fucking shitty, cheaty scumbags. Yeah. Like, and I like that there's kind of tweener. I'm not, like, I don't think Nyla's a tweener character, but I do like that they have, like, any kind of gray area with character development. Yeah. It's not like just heel base. Yeah. Will do no wrong. Cheats every single match. Like,
that's it. You know, and some are a little bit more obvious, like Pac earlier in the night. And, yeah. You know, and I appreciate that stuff. And Jericho, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. But
yeah. Yeah. Speaking of more obvious heels,
Cody.
he's a
huge heel for me this match.
So before we get to that, I just want to thank the artist who wrote the song for the video package and also the introduction to this episode of the podcast, Mikey Ruckus with Settle This. Cool. Thanks, Mikey.
Thanks, Mikey.
Cheers, Mikey, here.
Yeah. Ring the ruckus, bud.
So we get Cody versus Sean Spears with Tully Blanchard.
Yeah, so Sean Spears' entrance, he comes out with this, you know, cloak over his head.
It's not a cloak. It's a tiny, tiny scarf with a hood.
And it's also, he doesn't come out. They go black and the lights come up. Like, one spotlight comes up and he's just sitting on a chair to absolute, like, no music, just an absolute chorus of boos. It's perfect. This entrance is great.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think everything was great about this. And then, you know, he gets to the bottom of the ramp. Then Tully Blanchard comes out and takes the very small hood off his very small scarf or whatever.
To reveal his white contacts.
Oh, this is so I hate white contacts. I hate it when Seth Rollins did it at WrestleMania. I hate it now.
The only people that I think can get away with white contacts are luchadors. Because, like, it plays, it's, like, the mask thing. Like, when Rey Mysterio or, like, when Pentagon has white contacts, I'm here for it.
It works
or
with, like, the mask.
When Mil Muertes wears contacts.
With the red contacts.
Yeah. I love it when it's evocative, like, when it is part of the character building, where it's, like, this person is undead. Yeah. Or, like, this person has changed.
Sean Spears is from the frozen north of Canada. We all have white eyes like that because it's so cold here.
It's so dumb looking. I hate it. It's like, is he possessed now? Like I got it when Boogeyman did it.
Why Sean Spears? Would it be if Sean Spears just did the Boogeyman's
character eating worms? I'm here for it. Don't get me wrong. I ship that.
It was weird because it wasn't just the white contacts. It was him walking to the ring with his hood pulled over his face, walking really slowly, trailing the chair behind him. It did seem very much
the
like...
The same chair with the dried blood of Cody Rhodes still on it.
Dumb. I hated that. But yeah, it makes him seem more like he's presenting as... the Grim Reaper or death in the beginning, and then he just immediately becomes a shit heel within the first 10 seconds. He's just like, oh,
God, no, Cody. My contacts.
So Cody's really Triple H in these entrances up, eh?
Can I tell you?
Except really, really cheap.
Like the perfect mix between Johnny Gargano and a Triple H WrestleMania entrance.
Because that's exactly what I got off this, because Triple H always, he's never in the main event. But he's always, like, far enough off the card, and he's always got the really lavish over-the-top. And again, whatever, it's fine. What I did have a problem with, however, is his dog, Pharaoh.
Yep.
Poor pup.
Pharaoh. I'm sure Cody loves his dog very much.
And I'm sure he feels really bad about it.
I'm sure he does, but come on,
dude. Yeah.
This was a rookie mistake. You can see them. So Cody comes... He ascends from the floor.
Yeah.
In his stupid
the chandelier
outfit.
Lifts up and he comes out of the floor, which is like such a... Nobody else gets that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so...
Nobody else is coming out dressed as a Terminator.
It's super epic. And then you can see in this shot, they have like this Rainmaker-ass like wide shot of Cody coming up out of the floor. And you can see Brandy... And Pharaoh, because Pharaoh's bright white, so you can see them in this little, like, entrance tube. They have, like, those two entrance tunnels on either side of the chandelier. And
Everybody else tonight took so long to come out of those entrance tubes, and the one people who were, like, on time and on their queue is Brandy and Pharaoh.
And they really shouldn't have been. Like, she should have known that if there was gonna be pyro, she should have, like, they should have had the dog in a different room when the pyro ran off, and then have them come out just a little bit later, because poor dog got so spooked.
As a dog owner, and especially to a very skittish dog,
that
dog would be like my number one priority. I'd make sure there's no pyro. First of all, like coming out in front of a crowd is enough stress.
And
for
normally
a dog.
He does quite well. Like last show, I was watching him because I was assuming, I was like, oh my god, this huge crowd, all of this really, really loud music, he's going to be so fucked up. And he was totally fine.
But cool.
Obviously. Fire and fireworks
and the loud bangs.
Yeah.
You know, and as soon as you saw Pharaoh with like the tail between the legs and trying to run away, just call an audible and get Pharaoh out of there.
Yeah.
Like Brandy, go back and
then Brandy
leave him with somebody.
Just gone.
Or somebody, right? Just like leave Pharaoh with somebody else. I felt so
bad
for that dog.
Let DDP take Pharaoh. You know he doesn't want to be there dressed up as Star Trek.
No.
They needed to have that really great moment where Cody chooses MJF
throws up the dog cutter.
That was hilarious.
Let me fucking talk about this goddamn Star Trek cosplay, because holy shit.
Campbell has a lot of feelings.
I have so many thoughts on this. Okay, so first of all, we all know that I hate people dressing up as pop culture. Like, you yourself are already a character in pop culture. You are a wrestler. You are a character in the show. I want to see you dress as your character. I'm done with it. That being said, I appreciate attention to detail here. Like props for Brandy coming out as Seven of Nine. I think Voyager doesn't really get a lot of love, and I think Voyager is kind of an underrated Star Trek series overall, so it was nice to see that. I liked that they had like, so you have like Cody and DDP in red because Cody's the captain and DDP is his first officer.
It's like the Riker Picard, right?
Exactly. And then you have MJF in yellow because he's like Worf. He's like the security. He's the tactical officer. Yeah. And so that was the thing for me. I knew immediately that MJF was going to be in Cody's corner because he's wearing the security colors, right? He's wearing the yellow.
That's so fucking funny that you think of like Worf, and I'm thinking of like Columini. He's like the shitty transporter chief. Yeah. He's like the O'Brien. Under,
yeah. I was thinking like of an ensign, you know? No.
Exactly. No. Yeah.
Like ensigns can wear any color. Ensign is a rank. It is not a designation of career path. Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I didn't know that. Fucking nerd.
So nerd!
You want me to get really nerdy? This is my hottest take on this whole entrance. Please. Is that if they were going to have Pharaoh come out with them, they should have been dressing like the crew of Enterprise, because that's the only Star Trek show that has a dog on it. Okay? Should have come out dressed like Captain Archer, T'Pol, Trip Tucker, Malcolm, and Porthos. Like, that's your fucking, you know, come on. Come on!
That's your 5 of 9, I guess, you know?
What?
Is that a good joke?
No.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about right now.
Me neither. That's the one with the really, really booby Vulcan, right?
Yeah, Star Trek Enterprise is the horniest Star Trek.
Yeah, it's like Angelina Jolie as a Vulcan.
Lauren came home from work one time and I was watching Enterprise and she straight up thought I was watching porn.
Yeah, I remember it was one of the first episodes and like you didn't realize until I was like, are they straight up just going to strip down and have a shower and be wet together right now? And you were like, oh yeah, I guess this is really horny. And yeah. I was like, nah.
I did. Yeah. The thing about this entrance is I did kind of get a kick out of picturing Diamond Dallas Page, who like no doubt beat the shit out of so many kids who watched Star Trek when he was younger. Like picturing Diamond Dallas Page in Star Trek cosplay cleaning dog shit out of the entrance tunnel after the fireworks.
I don't know.
We can talk about the match now.
Thank
I've
you.
Said my piece.
The match was good.
I had a really big fight feel.
Yeah.
Like, I liked, this was kind of like a throwback. Like, everybody has a manager.
This
like
is it, how the main event should have felt.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm. This felt like a much bigger fight than the main event felt when that came around. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
But I thought this was, a lot of people, you know, especially with Cody matches, sometimes it can be a little overbooked, I would say. That too much happens and it's way too thought out.
It's so affected. It's like so overdone, I find, for a lot of Cody stuff. But.
Yeah, but this match I thought was a lot of fun, and I thought MJF did a great job during this match of kind of teasing a heel turn and then like, you know, doing a lot of the heel tactics to the ref, like distracting the ref.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of heel teasing. I actually like couldn't tell if they meant for that to be that way or not, mm-hmm, but yeah. That's how good it was.
That's it.
And Tully Blanchard played his part so perfectly.
Tully was
that guy who's like the spot where Sean Spears takes Cody's belt off and he's like gonna hit him with it and the ref's like Earl Hebner
is admonishing him.
He's like, Earl I Hebner, will kick you
has,
out.
Who has a history of screwing over good Canadian boys like Sean Spears.
That's right.
He's like talking to, and Sean Spears goes okay and gives him the belt and Tully just passes his own belt behind
so
the back.
So sly.
So sick.
So yeah. Good.
And then Sean fucks up and doesn't immediately ditch the belt. He just keeps holding it. But then they have all of these really sick like spots where Sean Spears is fully just whipping Cody in the throat and chest with his belt and it looks sick.
And they had this standoff where Tully got on the apron and then MJF got on the other apron and they're doing the stare down.
Yeah.
And Tully like very like casual tapes up his hand.
Yeah,
that
it looks
so
threatening.
Badass.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Holy shit!
I believe that.
Yeah,
nah. We get like they fight out in the crowd before the match even starts. Like this had a very like throwback feel to me. Of like, you know, like this was the fighting into the crowd at the start was reminiscent of like Stone Cold versus The Rock at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
the like. Whole sort of like manager aspect, having someone in your corner, like felt very like territories. The like it really felt like Cody was sort of like drawing on the legacy of Dusty.
Yeah.
In a way that I think from like a character perspective didn't really work that much. That like I think like Cody really, really has a great head for the business and I think like understands booking and story and character really, really well. But just like the circumstances of his life and who he is as a person, it like he really wants to be his dad, and who he is as a person is like he's Triple H.
Yeah, he can never be Dusty because he isn't the son of a plumber.
Exactly.
He's the son of Dusty Rhodes.
He's the son of a son of a plumber. My favorite grandson. Jimmy Buffett song. but yeah, like, it's that thing where it's just like, Cody has like all of the right pieces in place except for himself.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you put anyone else, like, if you put Hangman into that match the way that it was booked, Hangman is the all-American everyman.
Sure.
And Cody Rhodes is very much not that.
There's also a spot in the match where Sean Spears hit MJF with a bicycle kick.
Yeah.
And maybe it was Golden Boy, but it's like, hit him with a bicycle, which is an old Dusty Rhodes call. Because somebody had a bicycle, he's got a bicycle. You'll remember from the Botchamania entrance. But he hit him with a bicycle.
Yeah.
I thought that was very well done by Golden Boy or Excalibur, whoever made that call. Well done.
Lauren, go off on Arn Anderson here.
Okay, there's this really weird bit... Really weird bit where Arn Anderson... So, like, this is when Tully and MJF are getting involved, and I think Tully is beating up Cody at this point. Like, I think there's a scrap on the outside. And Arn Anderson, who I have no idea who the fuck this man is, but he just runs out, and he just... like he spine busts Sean Spears in the middle of the ring for some reason, and like, thank God for like Golden Boy, I am assuming, who is like, he's doing it because he just wants like an even straight up the middle or whatever fucking like fair match. And it's in my head, I'm like, why is this dude coming in and attacking Sean Spears? If he wants a straight up, like, a real even match, he should be attacking Tully at this moment. He should be attacking Tully, but they obviously can't have Tully take a spine buster. But, like, it was so weird and, like, off kilter, and then it really cheapens Cody's victory at the end.
Well, Tully and Arn were famously, like, a tag team.
Yeah.
I get this.
Right. And they were in the Four Horsemen. Yeah.
I got that just from, like, context clues, but, like, it doesn't mean... Like, that's why it should have been Arn being angry with Tully, not Sean taking it out on Sean.
Because that's the thing, is like, because it's Sean. Arn Anderson comes out and he hits Sean Spears with the spine buster,
yeah.
And then Tully just leaves.
Tully leaves?
Yeah, that doesn't make any
like,
sense.
He fucking dips. He just abandons Sean.
Doesn't make any sense because he looked confused walking to the back.
And he goes even through a different tunnel. Like, he should have been going through the same tunnel to be like.
Commentary tries to save it and they're like, oh, he's going to. See what's going on with Arn Anderson, but he leaves through a different exit.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's my thing where it's like, you should have had like Arn, obviously Arn Anderson goes out, you want to see him hit the spine buster because that's his thing, but like, what would have worked for the match better is if he just went out and like, if he just like grabbed Tully by like the shirt and just like hauled him out.
Well, I think everybody wanted to see the double A spot. Who knew Arn Anderson, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe they're building it that Arn and Tully are still friends. But he just didn't like what was going on in the match. Yeah. So Arn didn't want to attack Tully. It still doesn't make sense that Tully left.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe he was confused why Arn Anderson did that. But like, it still doesn't make sense to why he would leave ringside. Like, that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
That was the one slip up that Tully had in a otherwise flawless Tully experience.
I thought like
full Tully experience.
You want to talk about like Cody kind of like has a proclivity to like overbook the match.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was such a flawless match. It was like executed absolutely perfectly up until this point, and it was kind of like that Cody overbooking.
Yeah.
Where it was just like, you didn't need the DDP run in at like Double or Nothing or All In,
but people,
or whatever.
People like that stuff, right?
And you didn't need the Arn, and I felt like it really detracted from the match for me.
Fair enough. I think how it played out maybe detracted a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm okay with Arn Anderson coming in and a spine buster.
How many bald heads you
get? I gave 4 bald heads.
Yep.
I thought it was a really good match.
I really liked MJF in this match also. Like, yeah. I really liked, like we were saying before, with the teasing of the heel turn, and I liked that he was more of a hindrance to Cody in a lot of senses. Like, but it works with his character because he's so headstrong,
yeah.
And like, he's kind of like a loose cannon who ends up fucking his guy over.
And the way he was doing it was so he's got the right intention in mind, what he's going to do, and he's trying to like help his friend Cody, mm-hmm. but it's oblivious, right? But
exactly.
It's almost intentionally oblivious mm-hmm. because he's so smart and he prides himself on being so smart. So yeah. It's interesting. And then after the match, you know, him grabbing the chair and standing behind Cody and then looking at
so
the chair.
Threatening. Yeah. So threatening.
And then dropping the chair and be like, ah, that's fine.
Moving on, we have Escalera de la Muerte, a tag team ladder match for the AAA tag team belts featuring Los Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks.
What can you say about this match? It was awesome.
It was so good. Both of these tag teams are so smooth. They're so amazing. It's like beautiful art dance work in front of me, but it didn't feel too over choreographed for most of it. I do have a gripe that I will bring up at some point.
Go for it. What's your gripe?
Okay, so they have a lot of spots where they do like a mirrored move type of thing where like the Bucks, like one of the Bucks will be doing a move and at the same time one of the Lucha Brothers is doing the exact same move, and it's like they were trying to do it where it's like the younger brothers are doing the same move to protect their older brothers whatever. And
I
it was
my
like,
older brother.
I said that so many times when we were watching this match.
I know. But I just don't know how I feel about it, where it's like I think it was either Golden Boy or Excalibur like tries to logic this out by saying like they're so well matched and like so used to each other and they know each other so well that they think of the same moves at the same time, and it was a weird thing for me where it felt a little overbooked and over choreographed, and also it didn't make sense with like tag team wrestling. Like I want to see a tag team so well matched and so in sync. I don't want to see opponents well matched and in sync. Like I don't want to see them doing the exact same moves at the same time, and it happened throughout.
So I think my thing on it is like, yes, it happened throughout and they did it maybe like too many times.
Yeah,
but it happened in place of what we've seen before in every other Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers match, is that like the Young Bucks will hit a super kick together, or they'll hit like a synchronized Hadouken, or they'll hit like it's like the tag team doing the same move at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which we've seen so many times with these two tag teams. And so this was like them doing that like synchronized choreography, but splitting it up across tag teams so that it was at least something different from what we've seen before. Like, I don't think it was perfect, but I liked the idea of it, and like what I think they failed to do in their like last match was like heighten, like further the narrative of the feud. I appreciate that they were trying to do something that we haven't seen before in a feud where I feel like every match has kind of been the same and we've just seen it again and again.
And I think they need to, because they have matched up so many times and they do have a very, very telegraphed match style. And now that match style is amazing.
And I love to see them together, but yeah. I'm starting to feel like I'm done with them being matched up together. And I'm hoping that that was the last one, because yeah. I don't want them resorting to this bullshit of them knowing each other so well that they might as well just be a four-person tag team.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's super uninteresting to me.
And it's just like everybody has a match type, and the Young Bucks for sure have a match type, and the Lucha Bros for sure have a match type. Kenny Omega,
yeah.
You can tell if you're watching a Kenny Omega match. And, you know, when you see the same thing, especially with the same four guys doing it over and over again, like Campbell said, it's good to have a new element added in. And I think there were some new spots in this one that kind of, you know, freshened it up a little bit. But
the last match they had was against SCU, the Lucha Brothers, and mm-hmm. that was sick.
Yeah. The thing that I thought, like, furthered it really well was the mask spot where one of the Young Bucks rips off Pentagon's mask.
Fuck, that was so upsetting.
Was incredibly upsetting.
So stressful.
And like, that was a thing where it's like, I feel like we'll get to it in a second, but the way that the post-match happened, it definitely feels like they're moving on from this feud, but yeah. they left enough of a little bit there with that mask spot and that disrespect
yeah.
from like two teams that up until this point have had a lot of respect for each other, that it's like, this is a thing that we can revisit. We're like,
yeah.
we're definitely coming back
to that. That's a great point.
You know?
Yeah. I gasped. I was shocked that that happened.
Yeah.
And I like the Bucks a lot more as heels.
Yeah, the Bucks are way better as heels.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Matt or Nick Jackson taking that table spot.
That was rough.
Yeah, it's off the top of the ladder. I think
his feet caught on the top rope.
Yeah.
And that's what, like,
did it. And he clocks his head off the other table because he doesn't hit. Like, he basically puts everything on the one table, and he was supposed to spread it over the two, yeah. And he just kind
of
hits.
Well, and it's his head hits the corner of the other table.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the like, metal support structure under the wood of the table that he does go through doesn't break, so he cracks his head off that again.
It just looked so painful.
Yeah, it looked rough.
It was rough.
Lucha Brothers get the win.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get attacked by
Ortiz,
JFK, and Bill Clinton.
Sorry.
Point Break, ex-presidents. Golden Boy says Johnny Utah style, and I want to point out that Johnny Utah never gets to wear a mask.
And, it's, and he was very much against it.
And he was very much against it, and it was specifically Patrick Swayze says, "Sorry, Johnny, guess you don't get to be president," which is a great line. And then he says, "I am an FBI agent, and this is Cerro Miedo."
Very well done.
So yeah, who are these shining stars?
They're Santana and Ortiz. Not to be called LAX anymore. They're Santana and Ortiz.
Yeah. Good beatdown.
Good beatdown. It's again great to have another hot tag team come in and be added to the mix, and AEW's tag team division's on fire. That's ridiculous.
I'm just kind of wondering how it's going to work with, like, the AAA tag team, the AAA tag titles in the mix with this tag tournament as well, and, like, is there going to be two tag titles in the Fed, or, like, how, like...
I think this was supposed to be the end of the AAA tag team titles, in AEW, at least.
I think this was
the end of the story for
do
that.
The job for Big Mommy and Nino Ambergesa.
Exactly. But yeah, so in my head, this is a perfect bow, like, end of the... I don't know if it's been a trilogy with these guys, but however many matches they've had.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the right way to do it. And they introduced a new tag team, mm-hmm. have a new setup for the Young Bucks moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, Lucha Bros can go off and do something else now.
I hope LAX's new theme is "No One Rides for Free" by Rat.
Which that'd be sick.
Written specifically for the Point Break soundtrack.
Okay.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Stop it. Okay, Campbell, let's move on to the next match.
Stone Cold shots, Point Break quotes all day, all the time.
Next match, main event, Chris Jericho versus Hangman Adam Page.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got my horses.
This Hangman entrance is fucking cool.
Yeah, it's great. Seeing Hangman on a horse, I mean, of course,
yeah.
A horse. I love seeing him on a horse. This whole entrance was cool.
They were very clever in that they had zero pyro for their horse entrance.
Yeah, they waited until the horse, Tony Khan said, until the horse was out of the building before Chris Jericho's pyro went off.
Yeah, they let him get the fuck into the parking lot.
Yeah.
Can't hear any of those bangs.
No. Like, the video package was really good. Like, I think they did a great job on the road to All Out, like, selling Hangman, like that promo that he does in the public park.
Yes.
Where he, like, rips his stitches out.
Oh my god, that was so cool. I was freaking out at that. I hadn't actually, because I don't watch Being the Elite, and I'm assuming that happened on that or whatever, Road to All Out or whatever the fuck. But yeah, I just saw that for the promo package and I freaked out.
Well, because it's that thing where it's like, by the time when they got in there and they squared off, when Jericho got in there and Hangman got in there and they were kind of eyeing each other down before the bell hit. And, like, this is the one match where the outcome was spoiled for me beforehand. Like, yeah. I knew what was going to happen. But I still, in that moment, I was just like, man, I really hope Hangman wins it. And, like, not even, like, think, just, like, a very visceral, like,
you
intrinsic reaction where I was just like, man, I'm fully behind Hangman here. And then I was like, oh, no, wait, I know who wins. But, like, they got me for that second, you know? Sure. Even knowing who won, like, they got me.
And Hangman has some work to do. Like, I love Hangman. I'm the biggest Hangman supporter. But he's still got some work to do on his character, and I think he's very, very white meat babyface right now, and I think he needs a little bit of an edge to him, and he has to find that voice a bit. everything else about
ripping
him.
His stitches out is a good way to go to get
that was a great moment.
He's been really leaning on cowboy shit as like a Frit, which I'm here for. Like that's, I think if he can lean into that a little bit more and like rather than being like white meat babyface, because right now he's no gimmicks needed Adam the Cowboy, right? Like
it's Steve the Samurai.
It's like it's so goofy, and so I think it's a thing where it's like if he can lean into that like outlaw country cowboy shit and make that his character.
Yeah.
Like I'm here for it. Like I think he could work as kind of a Stone Cold, you know, kind of but like a little bit more cartoony and like
but
I think that cartooniness
you can still have it be cartoony and really hard and
because I think that fits in with the universe that AEW is building right now. You know? Like
but I think he's almost there. And,
totally.
And like
yeah.
you said, I was totally for Hangman winning this match when I was watching it live. Yeah. Even though I kind of knew Jericho should win.
Totally. Oh, know? Yeah. Like, but Jericho winning totally makes sense. I thought the match was really good. Like, it had maybe a little bit more if Cody versus Sean Spears had, like, more of, like, an 80s feel to it. I felt like this, they were going for a little bit more of, like, a 90s kind of, like vintage Jericho kind
of and
era.
There's a lot of good Jericho spots in this. Him ringing the bell.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and, like, throwing the bell over his shoulder and almost decking a cameraman in the face with it.
I liked him trying to shove the ref.
Yeah.
Aubrey Edwards, and she like gets right up in his face,
yeah.
and he backs down immediately.
Jericho, like the sort of like poetic full circle on Jericho getting his eye busted open, worked really well for me.
Yeah.
They did the blade spot on that a lot cleaner than they have done blade spots in the past with
Cody. Yeah, they definitely talked about it beforehand. The ref was like on him immediately to block him from camera view, and then he rolls out, and you can tell he blades over there.
She did a great job this match, by the way.
Yeah,
I love her. I've always loved her.
She there's one pinfall near the end though, where
right almost the very last one where
we was like, maybe a touch over the top for me.
We noticed like, this too.
Yeah, like just maybe a touch because like she's going 1-2 and I think it was a pin on Jericho after the last right, and then like he kicks out and she's like and she's like she puts her hands up and it's like you shouldn't like as the referee.
Well, because she did the whole thing beforehand with Justin Roberts' arm awkwardly under her armpit, where she was like, "I'm gonna call this right down the middle. I'm gonna be fair." And then it's like, "You're totally you are acting like you want Hangman to win."
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was like, it was a little much, but I thought in my opinion, she's my favorite ref, and like
she is extremely expressive all the time, regardless.
And I think you know I don't know if it was Double or Nothing. But there was a wrong bell call during the Joshi match.
Yeah.
And she fucking stuck to her guns.
Exactly. She stuck to her guns and she had like this dead stare eye.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm all for this. Mm-hmm. But that call, I was like, a little much for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought the match was good, not great. Yeah. Like, again, it didn't have necessarily the big fight feel that Cody versus Spears had, but like, it was a good match. My biggest gripe about this match is that Jericho hits the Judas effect, and he really drags ass on getting that pin.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
and he so, can I say for the Judas effect?
Yeah.
This is the best one he's ever hit.
I'm there with you. I still don't think it's 100%. I'm giving it, like, an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
But, like, again, I think he just needs to follow through instead of spinning back around. But that was a thing where it's like you don't want Hangman to look weak losing this.
Yeah.
And Jericho, for a guy who should know better, who has been wrestling for 30 years, like he should have been on that pin immediately.
Sure.
Because he dragged his ass to the point where I thought Hangman was going to kick out. Because Jericho got a kick out of the last rites. So I thought that Hangman was going to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I shouldn't have that doubt. Mm-hmm. If that's going to be the finish of the match, it should be the finish of the match.
Right.
You know? No, but like very minor kind of thing on what was otherwise, I thought, a very good match.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good summary. I gave it 4 bald heads.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good match. It should have been better for the caliber of match it was. Mm-hmm. The Cody level of overbooking a match, I think, especially for your inaugural AEW championship match.
Well, I there wasn't like any run-ins or like...
No, not like that, but just kind of it seemed at parts a little Jericho's doing his shtick. Now Hangman's doing his thing, and then Jericho's doing his thing.
I agree. Like, I feel like they didn't quite flow, and I was trying to figure out whether, like, I was trying to place blame and be like, whose fault is it that this isn't so smooth?
Yeah, and I don't think it's anybody's fault. I think maybe the match was just maybe not the thought before the match maybe wasn't put into it.
Yeah,
but they're both incredible workers.
Yeah,
and you know they can both have a great match, and this was a great match. But for the first ever championship match, I would have appreciated a little bit more of something
intensity,
something, right? Something I felt was missing.
Yep.
Who do you want to see challenge Jericho next?
You know my answer. It's Luchasaurus. Wardlow.
I was gonna say Wardlow.
Oh my god! I need to figure out more about Wardlow.
What more do you need to know?
I'm gonna register whowiswardlow.com.
Oh my god! I just need to know what he's about more. I don't know. I'm like way more. I'm so into MJF right now, and I really want to see him. Like, I think they're on the cusp of taking him to a different level, and I don't know if going for, like, the championship is what I want for him, but he's all I can think about right now, where I feel like he's such a jokey character, but I feel like they could really make him work kind of like Jericho, where he's just a really mouthy but dominant heel who can, like, destroy anything. I don't think he's ready for the title picture, so I don't have an answer for you, really, but I'm really excited about MJF.
I do think it's really smart, and, like, it's great for, like, this very much feels like sort of the twilight of Jericho's career. Like, this feels like the last chapter of Jericho, and that's not me saying, like, oh, he's getting too old, he can't go, but it feels like the veteran. And, like, I think it's a thing where, like, whoever takes it from him eventually down the line, I think doesn't necessarily matter, because it's Jericho being the champion and having people chase him, and I want him to have like a pretty decently long title run, but having people chase him and eventually passing the belt off to somebody else that moment isn't going to be Jericho putting a person over, it's going to be Jericho putting the company over.
Right.
You know, that it's like,
it's gonna this, be, then it has to be Hangman.
It could be Hangman, I hope it's not Cody, but it could be Cody, it could be Kenny. I do hope that it is like we get a Hangman redemption arc.
If you ask me right now, I think it's gonna be Cody.
Yeah.
I think it's, and I think that's gonna trigger the MJF turn on Cody.
Oh, okay.
Right. So that's my long term booking with this.
That'd
so
be cool. Yeah. MJF That'd be holds worth off. Cody winning to me. Right? I don't want Cody to win.
Because that story plays out with, you know, MJF finally turning on Cody.
Yeah.
Because of the AEW championship, his goal. I think that's the best way to do it. And just like kind of looking at who they have now, I don't buy a story with Kenny right now. I think he has like a redemption story to do.
Yeah.
You know, who else do they got, realistically?
It's like Hangman, Kenny, and Cody are, like, the only, like, face characters that I could see really stepping up to.
Yeah, Sean can't do it. He's not a face, and he's not ready.
Well, you know who it's going to be, though. It's going to be CM Punk.
All right. Normally, we do high spots and botch spots to finish an episode, but today we're going to do high spots and ward low spots.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Josh, start me off here.
Fuck. High spot of the night for me was the I'd say probably the Kenny Pac match.
Okay.
I think that match front end was the best put together, the best paced. For me, that was the match of the night for me. I'd say my low spot or my botch spot was probably the camera work in the women's
battle royale.
That was really bad. Inexcusably bad. Like, it felt like they were trying to invoke Kevin Dunn.
Just like I don't even think it was necessarily just the camera work. It was just the production as a whole.
The cuts.
It was the timing, the entrances, the camera work. Like, I totally agree.
It really took away.
My high is during the Dark Order Best Friends match. There's a really great call that JR makes, that I'm here to just parrot out what JR says every now and then. So he says, "I like that Trent is wearing the world's toughest bandana." thing hasn't moved an inch on his head since the match started. Is a really just quality, the type of quality commentary that I'm looking for.
JR, I felt like JR like had a couple before the show. Yeah. Like he was spicy. He's talking shit on Carolina style barbecue. Yeah.
He was being really nice about it. Very polite.
He was talking shit on like some DDTs or some pins or like something.
There was a comment after the Kenny Omega Pac match. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, next time they'll try to have a ground wrestling match when they get in there or something along those lines. I was like, what? It's like JR.
JR was spicy.
Yeah.
What was your Ward low spot?
So my batch spot, I refuse to say that. Is...
This is reverse psychology to get you guys to say botched.
It's like, don't say Wardlow three times in a row.
Wardlow.
Somebody's taking off his shirt.
So my botch spot is during the Young Bucks Lucha Brothers match. It's a ladder match, and they have ladders all around the ring. There's a fucking ladder right in front of the goddamn ring, in front of the hard camera for the entire dang match, and I can't see what's happening in the middle of the fucking ring because there's a goddamn ladder there, and all of the spots are lined up in the middle of the ring.
The only thing that you missed was about 20 Zero Miedo taunts.
Lauren's flapping her arms like a bird right now.
I was so angry, and I was so happy when Phoenix, like 45 minutes into this match, finally uses this ladder and moves it around so I can see the fucking action on the hard cam. Fuck. That was awful. I was so upset.
Yeah. All right.
My high spot was the thumbtack skateboard. You saw me. I stood up when
Campbell
that happened.
Made an insane noise. Like because I was expecting it. Because as soon as he brought the fucking skateboard out, I was like, he's gonna do a grind on someone's body. I don't think you believed me when
I
said
didn't
that.
Believe you at all.
And when it happened, you made this like horrible guttural. You were like, "Oh!" It was like, and you like raised your arms and stood up, and you were having like a really intense moment.
It was fucked. It was so fucked.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked.
Yeah. My Wardlow spot was. Why does everybody in this promotion have a theme song that is autobiographical? Everyone in this fucking company has an entrance theme song that's just like some dude singing about them, and it sucks. It's so shitty. They're like, private party, we're gonna have a private party, and like fucking like Kenny Omega's song is about him, and fucking like everybody has a song.
Cody?
Yeah, Cody. Like, every single person in this promotion has a song where the lyrics are, like, about their wrestling
career. Can you really quick write a song about Wardlow? He's walking through the parking lot.
Because it's like a thing where it's like we've talked about, like Mike Awesome's theme song is like about Mike Awesome. Like, there once was a man who went to Japan, and like
that. So Mike Awesome's theme song is amazing.
But it's a thing where it's like he's like one of the only guys in that promotion where the theme song is like about him. And so it's like if you picked like one wrestler, like one tag team, and like made the song like the lineage of like, and like every pay-per-view there's like a new verse about like what happened last time, like that would be sick. But the fact that it's like every single fucking person has like someone rapping about them is fucked.
It's pretty cool if you ask me.
Anyway,
you say storytelling's dead in wrestling.
Yeah, that was our hot takes on All Out. Overall, great show, right?
It was
like five hours that did not feel like 5 hours.
Yes. No, it was amazing the whole way through. Not, everything felt so good.
Yeah, not a single match that I think should have been taken off of this card.
No, and like there, I was invested in almost every single feud, and if I wasn't, I was invested in the characters involved anyway, so yeah. I was happy to see them wrestle, you know?
Yeah. If you want to check us out on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/stonecoldshots.
Yeah, follow our Twitter at stonecoldshots.
We also have an Instagram.
Stonecoldshots.
Yep.
Podcast. Yes. Stone Cold Shots podcast.
Yeah.
That's the Instagram is the one that's different.
Yeah, and you can also like subscribe to us and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on any other podcasting app that you may use.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Wardlow.
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 Wardlow!